Good evening. I'm Terry, and this is the discussion group call. It starts at 7 o'clock at this time every week on Thursday night. And I'm going to turn it open. You can discuss basically about anything you want. All of the views expressed are those of the people expressing them and not the views of the NLA, the National Liberty Alliance. And this is more of a chance for everybody to put their heads together and come up with some answers. So with that, I'll open the floor for discussion, and I'll mute out as well. What do y'all think about the best way, or any way that actually works? I mean, we've tried talking about committees of safety, we've tried talking about the sheriff, and we tried talking about starting our own court case that blows them out of the water. Nothing seems to work. Is there a way to do this that we can actually get something done, or are we at an impasse? What do y'all think? Am I going to be listening to myself all night? You guys don't have anything to talk about? I'll keep going. I want it understood that I'm doing this. But I want anybody to interrupt me at any time and go off in your own direction. Leave the group where you want to lead it. Me, personally, I've been reading this book, The U.S. Constitution and the 196 Indispensable Principles of Freedom by Oliver DeMille. Anybody do their homework and look up QSMX Pilot on the YouTube? See any videos? I didn't figure. All right, everybody, unmute yourself. It's time for a little question and answer here. I'm gonna give you guys a little quiz. Come on, everybody, unmute yourself. Thank you, Jeff. So, James, you're not going to join in?
Well, Terry, I'll interject.
Okay. I definitely want you here, James, and Jeff, and California Fred. So, when the founders were working on the Constitution, let's say. And they wrote letters back and forth, and they made speeches and everything. I think this is based upon the letters back and forth. Who did they quote? Who did they quote the most? Who did they read? Lutz and Heinemann went through an estimated 15,000 items the founders wrote, including 2,200 books, 2,200 books, newspaper articles, and pamphlets on political topics. In these, they found 3,154 references to other sources. These are the things the founding fathers, the founding generation quoted. The study covers quotations on political topics from 1760 to 1805. And I do believe that's the, is that right here? American Political Writing During the Founding Era, 1760 to 1805, Volumes 1 and 2, by Charles S. Heinemann and Donald F. Lutz. Got a copy right there, you heard it. What they found is often amazing to modern Americans, many of whom believe that the founders got their freedom ideas mainly from the Greeks and the Romans. You believe that? Please, step in. I want to be interrupted. So please, interrupt me. If you have something to say, please step in and say it. And if you want to go a different direction and get off this topic, let's do it. But for right now, I'm going to do a little education. In fact, more than any other source, they got their great freedom ideas from who? Who was the number one source? Anybody want to hazard a guess? Come on now, you guys are smarter than this. I heard a bit. I don't know what that means. Jeff, you're unmuted. Give me a guess. Who do you think was it the Greeks, the Romans, or somebody else that they quoted the most?
Well, I remember reading Jefferson and learned a lot from a gentleman. I can't think of his name right now. I don't know if it was Locke. It wasn't Locke, was it?
No, it was George Wythe that taught Jefferson, but that ain't who the answer is. Want to try again?
Yeah.
James, you want to try? In fact, more than any other source, they got their great freedom ideas from the Hebrews. So what does that mean? Why could they get these ideas from the Hebrews? Anybody want to hazard a guess?
Well, starting off with natural law.
Yes, and where does that come from?
And also, well, it comes from two of the commandments. I'm trying to deal with the echo here.
I'm sorry.
You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Those two hands,
yeah.
The law and the prophets.
And so that's
also, they got some of their ideas from...
What book did it come from? I haven't heard the book yet.
Oh. Leviticus, I think.
The what?
Leviticus? That book?
It's the Bible. You're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. When it talks about Hebrews, they're talking about coming from the Bible. And then who do you think was the next? And for those who just joined, Lutz and Heinemann went through an estimated 15,000 items, and they totaled up where the founders got their ideas about everything. And we've started it off with, they got 34% of the direct quotations come from the Bible. just like Jeff did just a second ago. And stop me if you want to talk about something else. Otherwise, we're going to see if we can get the rest. So after the Bible, who did they quote the most? Now you got to want to hazard a guess on a name. Okay, I'll give you an idea. It starts with an M. Anybody get a guess? It's no harm in guessing. Just say it out. Stop me if I'm going too far. Who's heard of Montesquieu?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit of him.
Montesquieu was a writer. And third was another person. Now, you might know these. One was mentioned before, but it's not the next one. So who was left off? What's the next? Third most quoted was who? Anyone? Please guess. There's no harm in guessing here. Are y'all? Go ahead. Is anybody here afraid that I'm going to say something naughty on it? Nobody's guessing? Or do you just not know the answer and you're afraid to guess? If you're afraid to guess, how are you going to stand in front of that judge? The silence was deafening. I know, you guys are trying to confirm the adage that silence is golden, so shut up and get rich, right? Blackstone, anybody heard of Blackstone? Anybody know what he wrote?
Isn't he a musician?
Isn't he a what?
A magician.
Oh, he may be now, but he wasn't back then. For the founders to have quoted him, he had to have written before 1776 or 1787. Anybody ever heard of Blackstone's commentary on the laws of England?
Yep,
I have to. So who's the next one they quoted? And it's been mentioned already once, Jeff.
I guess that might be luck.
You're absolutely right. Ding, ding, ding. You want to be dog.
I got lucky on that one, yeah.
What? Go ahead. You kind of burble in there. Who's next after that? This is a little tougher. Who is fifth?
Adam Smith.
Oh, you're close, but not exactly. No, it's somebody from Scotland.
Oh, Vattel?
No? I couldn't hear what you said. Maybe I got it wrong. Who you said? There's another guy from Scotland. Anybody ever heard of David Hume?
Okay.
David Hume is from Scotland. Look him up on the Wikipedia. And then there's one more. In 1776 and 1787, all of these were household names, widely read and discussed, as evidenced by the newspapers, pamphlets, and even sermons of the era. And the sixth one was widely read in the original 13 states and with the Bible traveled across the continent in covered wagons and ships and helped educate the entire westward expansion of the United States. Anybody want to guess on that? As a matter of fact, it does now get back to the Greeks. So who do you think they would have included? The sixth one is the inclusion of the anybody want to hazard a guess? Was it Aristotle? Was it Plato? Was it Socrates?
Cicero.
I'm sorry?
Cicero.
Cicero. He was Roman around the turn of the century. There, the life of Christ. It was right before that. No, it wasn't Cicero. It was Greek. His name was Plutarch. Anybody ever heard of Plutarch? Jeff? From Missouri?
I don't remember hearing that.
Plutarch. So here's the breakdown. Together, these top six sources account for over 55% of the direct sources the founders quoted from, 34% from the Bible, 8.3% Montesquieu, 7.9% Blackstone, 2.9% Locke, 2.9% Hume, and 1.5% Plutarch. Other classics, including Shakespeare and others, make up most of the remaining sources. Did you guys know that before? All right. I opened the meeting, just for those newbies, I opened the meeting and said, talk about whatever you want. And nobody spoke up. So I went ahead and spoke up just a little bit. And I'm going through the U.S. Constitution and the 196 Indispensable Principles of Freedom by Oliver DeMille. And that was the first part of the book. And I think we've forgotten that. Now, there's a lot of people that say, well, I don't have time to read that. I got some of these books back here. Just so you know, the people who did this were, Charles S. Heineman and Donald S. Weiss, and they made a two-volume set, American Political Writing During the Founding Era, 1760 to 1805. So that's what we're discussing, or that's what I started discussing, until somebody jumps in and comes up with another topic that they want to discuss. I'm all for it. But I don't want to waste time just sitting here with nothing to do, so I'm going to do a little edumacating. And you don't have to listen to me, and I appreciate it, as a matter of fact, if you go ahead and say something. So, there's a volume one and a volume two. Now, how many pages are in these two volumes? Volume one has 704 pages, and volume two it just keeps going, so forget that. The two-volume set, including the index and everything that they've got in there, comes to 1,417 pages. Not something that you read in between everything a whole lot. So right.
Can you
there,
give me the title again?
American Political Writing, is that the one you're talking about, or do you want the 196 principles? American Political Writing. Good night, buddy. Good night, who?
I'm sorry. Yeah, my grandson was in here.
Great. I'm glad. Isn't that nice? American Political Writing During the Founding Era, 1760 to 1805. So American Political Writing During the Founding Era.
Got it.
Charles S. Heineman, Donald S. Lutz. Now, the reason that I point to the U.S. Constitution and the 196 Indispensable Principles of Freedom by Oliver DeMille as he condenses some of this stuff down and takes out some of the key points. Do I like doing that? No, I don't. I'd rather read the whole thing. But do you have time? And you know what? We're running out of time. Does anybody dispute that fact? We need to have enough smart tennis where we go forward with actions, and that's going to happen soon. So, who wants me to continue, or does anybody have a topic today they'd like to talk about? I'm starting the stopwatch.
Hello, Terry. This is Jim from New York.
Hi, Jim. How's it going tonight?
Yeah, I got a hard time hearing people. And I don't know whether there's a lot of background noise.
Yeah, we had a little bit because I asked everybody to unmute themselves. But I think everybody's muted but you and me at the moment. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I don't know if you were talking about Blackstone. Was that you talking?
Yeah, that was me.
Oh.
That was me talking.
I guess maybe with all the background noise, it was kind of garbled.
I'm sorry. I was talking about this book, The U.S. Constitution and the 196 Indispensable Principles of Freedom by Oliver DeMille. And if you need me to read that title again, you can do it on the recording or I'll do it again. Either way. And that we were talking about when Heinemann and Lutz wrote their book that's 1,400 pages, they found that the most 55% of the quotes or citations, the sources that the founders quoted in writings from 1760 to 1805 came from only six places. 55% of the quotations came from six places. You want to try and hazard a guess of what those top six were, Jim?
What was the timeline for this? Was this
1760
the revolution?
1760 to 1805.
Oh, I'm sure it was Jefferson and all of his buddies, John Adams.
Well, those are the people that wrote during that time. But who did they quote? In other words, where were they getting their ideas?
Oh, okay. Probably John Locke.
Locke is one, yeah.
There was an Irish guy. What about Burke? When was he around? Edmund Burke? I have a hard time with dates.
Not so much with Burke. So Burke wasn't one of them. What would you start with if you're going to start on natural law? What would you start with? What would you start quoted right off the top?
Oh, probably the Bible, huh?
The Bible. That was the biggest one. 35% of their quotes came from the Bible. And then it jumps all the way down to 18.3%, or 8.3%, was from Montesquieu. 7.9%.
He was a bad guy.
Montesquieu.
Yeah.
Why do you say he was a bad guy?
I don't know. I guess that must be maybe it was Robespierre or something with the
Robespierre, I agree, was a bad guy.
You know, I don't know much about any of them, you know, in the whole gamut, you know. I just heard their names and try to associate it with some action or.
Well, let me run down through it real fast. Montesquieu, 8.3%. Blackstone, you remember Blackstone?
Oh, yeah.
7.9%. 2.9% for Locke. You already said Locke. Hume, 2.7%. So he's almost right up there with Locke. And
yeah.
Then 1.5% agreed. And I had heard of him before, but I didn't know anything about him. And that's the chapter I'm on right now. And that's Plutarch. Have you ever heard of Plutarch?
No.
So Plutarch had a lot to say, and they quoted. So think of this, that the things that were written, those ideas, are still standing. They're right here. They've been corrupted. Wouldn't you say?
Uh I didn't really hear what you were saying.
The ideas that these men wrote about the founding fathers, 1760-1805, they constructed by talking amongst them and having read and quoted a whole bunch of these people, these authors, these six sources. 55% of what they wrote, they quoted these authors in or the Bible, Montesquieu, Hume, Locke, Plutarch, and I'm missing one. Blackstone.
Oh yeah, Blackstone.
So from that, they were able to forge a constitution that has lasted for how many years? 242 years, something like that. Am I off base here?
Okay. I guess that's open for interpretation.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I mean it's around, but if you have a constitution that's around and the people and the servants that are supposed to be following the constitution don't follow it anymore, then is it really around? You know?
Well, who's responsible for that, do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, that can go along a lot of lines of responsibility, but, you know, I just throwing that out there as for discussion is that it seems like since, you want to grab a date of 1871 or you want to go back to 1789 when they did the Judicial Act, but I don't know if the Constitution was ever followed after.
Well, I'm gonna say that in 1776 we formed a country. Now we didn't do real good at the very first attempt, so we all got together, or some of us got together. It wasn't me; it was my founding fathers,
uh-huh.
And designed, structured a new form of government. It had not existed, and here we are. We've almost lost it, and without pointing fingers back to me and you, I do want to say that this government is worth keeping. I think it's the freest government that's ever been created by man.
Right, even though it hasn't been around for 100 years.
Well,
but anyway,
the country started it 242 years ago in 1776, roughly. So I'm going to say 240 and just call that the number for now.
Yeah. I'm not trying to be difficult.
No, I appreciate you talking. And I appreciate anybody else that wants to contribute. Please open up. And if you want to change the subject, go right ahead. But these are the people that our founding fathers were reading. And it explains in this 196th book what they were talking about and what they were thinking and where they got some of their ideas. And I've been reading. Now, is it more efficient? Like, when we start talking about you need to do your research, you need to do your study, should we be reading these double volumes of Heinemann and Lutz? Should we be reading the Second Treatise of Government and a Letter Concerning Toleration by Locke? Should we be reading that? Should we be reading David Hume Essays, Moral, Political, and Literary? That's what David Hume wrote. Let's see, that's another. So there's over 1,400 pages in Lutz and Heinemann. In David Hume's collection by who collected this? David Hume. There's a guy who collected it. It's got David Hume's picture in here. This was done by Eugene F. Miller and T.H. Green and T.H. Gross. There's 683 pages, including the index. I guess what I'm saying is...
That's a whole lot.
Do we got time to read that?
I would say that it's good to peruse through it and understand the gist of it, but to actually try to understand the whole thing, I think we pretty much do understand the whole thing, even though we haven't read it. I mean, those of us in modern day freedom age, I don't think it has to be explained to us that much. We're at this point where they were, where the king was stepping all over them with no recourse. Is there like an echo of mine?
It might be me.
Oh.
Let me turn off my mics. Let me turn off. Let's see. That might help, and this might help.
Yeah, I don't want to have to have things said twice. But anyway, you know, for me, I mean, I've been reading for 20 years now, this, that, and the other, and not like War and Peace or whatever. But I've been reading and learning stuff, and I really don't think that reading another 600 pages is going to lighten me any more than I am right now. I think what we need now is we need strategies, successful strategies, to move us back into the realm of freedom. I don't know whether it's embarrassing these people or protesting outside the courts or whatever it may be. I really don't know. I really despise the idea of protesting, because an hour after you're all done protesting and you're all gone, everybody else forgets it unless they watch the 6 o'clock news. And 2-3 days later, nobody even remembers what you went down there for. However, if you went down and protested and it actually turned violent or something, then everybody would remember it. And that's really sad, is that because we're mortal human beings, when something happens like that, everybody wants to know about it and pays attention to it. But if there's no controversy, nobody's going to pay attention. I won't say nobody, because there's obviously us are paying attention. I don't know whether that means we have a lot more time on our hands or we have different interests than the vast majority of the people out there, or maybe they just don't feel threatened. I mean, at times I don't feel threatened, but then when I sit back and contemplate on it, the threat is creeping, you know. It creeps upon us slowly, like the frog in the pot, you know, the boiling frog. I wish there was an easy answer, but there's not. So it's January 3rd. When is Q going to drop off any more? Are we having stuff go on? On the national level here? Does anybody hear anything?
I tried to mute myself so I wouldn't feedback on you. Does this help your echo? Say something.
Yeah, I no, it doesn't really.
Okay, so
but it's only me, so maybe it's because I'm on Bluetooth.
Oh, could be, yeah. Your Bluetooth mic could be hearing what you're hearing and cycling it back if you got your speakers on.
All right. Well, let me go on speaker then. Is it echoing now? Yeah.
An echo. I've never had an echo.
Oh, well, then it was me, so it must be me. So that's all.
Is the echo gone?
No.
So, how do we find these successful strategies then, Jim?
Huh. I don't know. I think I tried a couple of ideas, and they didn't seem to take on, you know. I wanted to, work on a local level. But I was discouraged about that because really on a local level, you only have a couple people in maybe a certain area, you know, two or three or four or five or maybe even just one. You know, you're a party of one, so you think of how much can you do by yourself, like at your county level. But if you start a Facebook page in your county level and you start some discussion and then maybe you grab some articles that were around the internet and you put them on there and then maybe pasted them up at, you know, with Staples or whatever, put them up at the local grocery stores, you know, the stuff like that, and people would see it, and then maybe they would like your Facebook page, and then you could start to get some consensus there. Because this interests a lot of people. The only problem is they're looking at it like they're not going to waste their time doing it if it's not going to go anywhere. We find the same thing with with gun rights groups, is that, you know, you'll get around and talk about it, and everybody will have a bitch session, but there really isn't any successful strategies to back up what we're doing, because we don't have the same power that they do. We have the ultimate power, but we don't know how to exercise it because we're all not together on the same page. I mean, even in L.A., some of us want to do one thing and some of us want to do something else. And if you're going to go ahead and do your thing, I don't care about that. I want to do my thing. So it kind of keeps us fractured, you know. And that's why it's nice where a lot of us just go with the flow and go with John and Gerard, and we kind of follow that train of thought, because at least then we're unified and we're working towards a goal. I just don't know. And I meet other people out there on the internet that are doing things differently and having some measurement of success. Felicia Collins sent me one thing about lawyers down in Florida that were doing foreclosures the wrong way, and then they got caught and they got sanctioned by the state, but they never gave any of the properties back. You know, it's just that they entered in, they did things not the right way, and they just kind of slapped on the wrist for it. But people like Felicia never got her house back. And it's done wrong all around, and yet they just continue to do it. I don't know. I mean, I also wanted to take our sheriff program and do it on a small scale, like in a countywide scale, find a sheriff that's favorable to us and send him 20 books, you know, and get him in the groove where him and his deputies are at least starting to train like that. And then there's going to be some complaints from the status quo, but as long as the sheriff is on board with it, that's a great way. And then, of course, sheriffs next door to him or them will see success or not such success, and they'll grade us on that. You know, they'll grade the people there. So I think that pressure on the local level is extremely important. And there you can do it one way, another county can do it a different way, another county in a different state could do it a different way. Like in Connecticut, they don't have any sheriffs. So what do you do there? You know? And I don't know. I think that should be entertained, you know, that we should be rocking and rolling with that. But when I brought it up to the powers that be in our organization, they said it was too early. And then you would have to open a case in each county. But I think that if a county got together and filed it in their county courthouse, then you'd go from there.
you know, when the statutory grand jury goes ahead and comes to a determination, they file it in their county courthouse, and then the district attorney is handed up the indictment, and he acts on it. Same thing. If the DA doesn't want to act, then you give it to the sheriff. And if your sheriff is on your side, so you don't expect the DA to be on their side because he works for the, he's a servant for the county. I mean, we should expect him to be on our side, but that doesn't mean he's going to, because he's a member of that evil organization that we're fighting against. Of course, up on the upper levels, you know, we have to move that over and finally get that suit against the Judicial Department and throughout the whole United States and the Bar Association. But I'm sure that they'll just come up with some way, you know, to throw it out and call us a bunch of whatever they want to call us. But that doesn't mean we're going away, because we're almost never going to go away unless they stop stealing from us, unless they stop taking children, taking people's property, taking all their life savings. I don't think that they plan on stopping that. So we're just going to get bigger and better, regardless of what they say. So that's why I stay within L.A., because it's definitely the future. It may not be the present, but it is definitely the future, because they're working 24/7 to steal from us. So how's that for some discussion?
Hi Jim, this is Jeff. I agree with what you're saying, and to me, I've got two things.
The county's over.
What's that?
Is it Jeff from a couple of counties over?
I don't know. I'm not sure what county you're in.
I'm in Albany.
Oh. Okay. Nope. No. Long ways away. He's
okay.
In Tennessee.
All right.
Yeah, Tennessee. But there's two things in my mind, two obstacles that I think I see in my situation, which is, number one, trying to the education process, trying to get people to see enough and learn enough that they can find a reason to care about what I'm talking about, or what this is all about. Then the second item in my mind is, where else have we had some successes in my state? Are there any meetings whatsoever along this line? You know, that has to do with, could be a COS, could be something to do with juries or any of the related issues that NLA promotes. So, like I say, that number one is education. I think that's it's a slow endeavor for us. I've handed out a lot of books, talked to several different people. One of these days I need to get with the sheriff. I know the sheriff. I've met him many times in some of the different county meetings that I've been in. I just need to find a day off from work and to schedule some time with him. But there again, I know they're, I need to prepare myself a little bit for that also. I don't want to get real heavy, just want to keep it light, give him a few books, and then plan to meet him again sometime, you know, for more in-depth discussion. So, but for me, that's a couple of things I see. Trying to get people to care. In fact, I've got a daughter, and I've talked to her about some of this stuff, and she was very blunt with me, and she said, "Dad, why should I care?" Okay. She doesn't understand history like me, and most everybody I know, we were not taught much history whatsoever. Therefore, we had no understanding of a lot of these basics. So I think it's a huge thing. There's a lot of people that don't understand colored strips of paper have no value. You know, that's a hurdle right there. So I'm thinking it's you have to be gentle about teaching them a few things.
Talking about fiat money?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Colored strips of paper, especially the ones that do not say silver certificate, you know. And I was talking to my pastor today briefly, and he didn't even know he didn't even understand that at one time our dollar bills were backed by silver or gold, you know. He didn't even know that. So there's a lot of lack of education out there, just basic stuff.
Well, that's another thing,
I'll be
too,
quiet
on, a local level, when school districts are formed back in the, I don't even know when, but when central schools were brought about, I would say back, 100 years ago or so, and they tried to set them up, the people didn't like it. They were not for them. They understood the reason why you didn't want any central schools. So in order to placate the people, because you always had your little red schoolhouse, but then you had one here and one there, and they wanted to centralize. And it was a good thing. And that's when they came up with the idea of a local board of education so that people at the local level could go ahead and have their input on their school. And then, of course, the state came in, offered the carrot and stick, a.k.a. money. And then they started mandating what they wanted to do, and then the schools were taken away from us. But that doesn't mean that even on a local level we could not make it to the grand jury to tell them to bend. They're the servants of the people, and people are represented by the grand jury, and they should direct the schools to go against what the state is telling them because they don't have the jurisdiction over them. I mean, now the state can tell the school what to do, but if we tell the state what to do, that takes precedence. And I'm sure that when it was set up, that was like that. Otherwise, it would have never been set up. But over time, the people backed away. The boards of ed became under the guise of the administrative ability of the state through the money, and it was all taken away. But that doesn't mean it can't reverse and go back. You would just have to show it, as opposed to the people that actually want to become involved in a local grand jury and review the situation and decree what the law should be. And then the Board of Ed would have to follow the law. Either that or they would be held accountable. I mean, these things can be done on a local level with no problem. I'm not saying they are going to be done, but they can be done. It's in there. The process is there. Just like, when the grand jury gets together, they act as the people, as the kings, the ones that are concerned, the ones that are at least concerned enough to come down and serve on the grand jury. So it's kind of like a voting. Anyway, that's my dream. I believe that's the way it was set up. I don't really have the ability to look all of that up to prove it, but it makes common sense that if they were going to set up some kind of central form of education that flew in the face of Mein Kampf. No, that wasn't not Mein Kampf. I'm sorry. What was the Communist Manifesto? Get them mixed up all the time. Then the people would rally against it, which is why they came up with the boards of ed. So on a local level, that could be taken into account. If you're teach the people, teach the students what it is that we need them to know. We don't really care what GlaxoSmithKline thinks what we should be learning in school. It's the parents that make that decision. And if they're uninformed, then they should become informed. There's the great paradox right there. Anyway, that's all I got to say. Anybody else want to chime in? That's fine.
Hey, guys. It's Jefferson, Southwest Missouri. How y'all doing?
Just fine.
I just wanted to pop in for a second and say we got a lot of legislation coming through here, and they're trying to infringe on our Second Amendment again and again, over and over again. I'm sure many people on the call are experiencing this in their states. We got a whole new set of constitutional subverters raise their right hands today. They also have pre-filed gun bills. They want to ban the private sales across the United States. So the question is, everybody's right on with the education part. That's key. Our militias, our 3%ers, they're key. Citizens arrest, key. Grand juries, key. We've got to stop this assault on our Second Amendment because everybody knows that when it's gone, everything's gone. And we can't let that happen. So hope everybody's aware of how quickly this is going to go down. Remember I said they're pre-filing the bills. They're not even waiting for a session. They're ready to push them forward as soon as the session comes through. So be aware. Like here, they want us to put our guns in our trunk when we're carrying them in our car. Well, what good is that going to do? If you need it, you know? So, I don't know. I feel your frustration, brothers in arms. I feel it. And
the question is, are we
predisposed to suffer as written in the Declaration? How bad does it have to get before we stand up and say no? That's the question. I yield.
And the answer to that is it's probably got to get pretty bad before that happens. You know, like I like to refer to it as a couple of weeks of not eating, and then everybody will listen up. You know? So I don't know whether it's going to be we'll all be in concentration camps, but after a couple of weeks of not eating, you have all different perspectives.
Yeah, but then it's chaos. There's no hope of getting any organization when you're defending your own food stash, and like you said, people have gone overboard from hunger. Well, hunger is one thing, but water, you know, that's the key. 3 days, you're dead. So if you're the one that's got a still, you know, if you've been making liquor or whatever, and you got a still, you go out there and make your water, and boy, you'll be a hero when there's no water and no food, no none of that. So remember the water. 3 weeks without food, it's a long while, but you're right. That's going to bring out the demons in everybody, right?
I mean, it's this way. You won't have to, you won't be talking to them and having them look at you like, gee, I'm really sorry right now, but Seinfeld's on. I'll see you later. And you guys have fun with that, all right? I'll talk to you again. And, you know, but you can't watch TV when you're starving to death. You know, I just think that's the critical mass. You know, there's the great tubular box that sits in front, the idiot box. They didn't call it that for no reason, and that was way back when.
Yeah.
But I think
I know that in the end, even the 3% of Americans that are awake and that are trying to get people educated, they will rise to the occasion when the time comes. So, you know, sleep well at night, knowing that those militias that were built in the 90s were built big then, and they're even bigger now. So we have the unorganized militia, you know. That's part of our deal. So we're gonna run with that. And as far as I know, any of the organized militias, they're not real hip on the actual things that are happening to us right now. So I don't put much trust in the ones that I've run into around here in Missouri, but maybe there's some good ones around. I'm not saying there's not.
Yeah, and we should have a
militia is going to be a big deal, because if you're going to make your citizens arrest, which you're going to have to be made, you're going to have to have your back with your militia there. So, you know, and it's all legitimate in every state. A felony, you can make citizens arrest as long as you witness it. Well, it's not too hard to witness a felony, I don't believe, in today's world, is it, fellas?
No, not at all.
In any courtroom, in any courthouse in this country, clerk, lawyer, prosecutor, judge, sheriff, the whole bit. I don't think it's going to be hard to bring up the felony indictments. So it's just a matter of time. I believe that either the economic crash or something like you said will go down, and it'll force people's hand. And I hope that's not the case, because that'll be very difficult.
Yeah, you'll have a lot more than 12 angry men then.
You betcha. Thanks for your time, fellas.
And you'll have some angry women, I imagine, too.
Yeah, all the women around here know how to shoot pretty well.
So, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. You know, they do a lot. They hunt a lot quite often here. So the women are very involved in the outdoors. So that's a plus. You know.
Yeah, I wonder how long it'll take without food before there's no deer in the woods. You know.
We've almost had that happen back in the Great Depression already here in Missouri. Our deer population was decimated.
You had to eat, right?
Yeah, they had to eat, and this could be another Great Depression. There's a lot of hungry people now in the U.S. There's a lot of people that don't have $1,000 in their bank accounts. They don't have any backups, no nothing. Most of them. So when we talk about the bottom 3%, there's a lot more, but the 3% that are always going to be there are always going to be armed, and they're always going to be knowledgeable about the Constitution. So we can only let them take it so far before we stop it. And, boy, it's getting close. But our education has to continue.
Well said. Anybody else? Don't be shy. I know you got thoughts swimming around in your head.
Well, I took some notes. This is Terry speaking. Now, I'm a national coordinator in NLA, and I'm trying to educate myself so that when I talk about this stuff, I'm talking from a point of knowledge about what I'm talking about. Now, I don't know if I'll ever get there of what I need to be, but I've heard a lot of good things tonight. I really appreciate everybody's input. And we all know what needs to happen. And any time between now and when it starts happening, when the flag goes up and people start saluting it or don't salute it, we need to be ready to go. And the distance in time between now and when that happens is getting shorter all the time. So to me, this is the time to prepare with education and thinking about these things. You guys are here. You're thinking about these things. I want to know how I can help you, and I want to know what you need from me. Think about it. I'll probably be around on the next meeting, but there's been a lot of things mentioned. Your thing about the 3%, yeah, 3%, that's a good number, and you have to have that. Those are the leaders. It takes another 10%. It takes a total of 10% before you can really change this country and change the way things are. In between now and then, we need to be preparing the people. We need to be educating the people. That means you need to educate yourself. Tell them what you know. Get out there and tell them what you know. And I think Jeff, one of the Jeffs, talked about how they gave away constitutions and everything and asked questions of people. I think that's a wonderful idea. Well, we also need to know what NLA needs to do. So if you have questions or insight, I kind of think that's what this group is for, but it's to discuss really anything you want to discuss. It's totally open. I don't drive it. Jan doesn't drive it, and nobody else drives it. You'll rarely see a Gerard and a John in here, but they listen to the meeting, maybe on the recording. So I appreciate it. Before I close, anybody want to say anything else, please go ahead now.
Hi, Terry. Jim here. I just wanted to say that these discussions on Thursday are perfect for throwing out ideas, bouncing them around, even though there's only 10 or 15 people in here. Just the fact that you're out there and you're discussing it, getting some feedback on things, that's how you build a consensus to go the way that NLA is going to go, regardless of what it's taking about through these discussions. I would like to see more people, but if we just have people listening and then, you know, listening through the week through the discussions, so they can kind of stay on track of thinking free and contemplating the idea of, you know, absolute liberty and stuff like that. And, of course, getting a court record back so that we could go to court. I think most of us are ready to go. I know I am. I mean, if I ever thought we could actually get a court of record open in any federal district court, I'd be in there every day of the week now, because I see that it's that easy, but I also see that they're just not going to let it happen. So that's definitely a big uphill battle, and that needs a lot of discussion between people as to strategies of getting it through. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say, is that these discussions are great. And I'll let it go at that. I'll yield.
Anybody else?
Great call. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for participating, Jeff. I appreciate it. You had some good remarks today. And the other Jeff, too. Anything else? Anybody else want to say anything before I close it down? Please go ahead now.
Hello, Terry. It's Jim again.
Yes,
Terry.
Yes, sir.
Are you doing a Q review?
Am I doing a Q review? Haven't done one, but I did read pages 184 to 196 in the book I mentioned earlier, the 196 Principles book by Oliver DeMille. I made a video on that. So anybody wants to see it, go up and look for QSMX Pilot or Patriots Roundtable. You'll find it. I recorded it this morning. Not a whole lot of Q going on. The last drop was 22 December.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. I was saying, boy, there's got to be some more after that. But I thought maybe I was on a specific site for a day or something.
Well, a lot of things happened because the executive order covering the UCMJ took effect 1 January this year. And mm-hmm. Congress needs to be set. So I think you're going to see things start to get a little more exciting here over the next few days. But I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know the timeline. And I sure hope that they've got it under control. The whole idea behind Q is they're trying to get enough people red-pilled so that there's nobody in the streets hurting other people. And I sure hope it works that way.
Yeah, that would be sad if, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of people were rioting.
But like, who said it? Oh, let's see. Jeff in Missouri said that, how much suffering do we got to suffer before we get it and we start taking action to take back control of the government? I think that's an excellent point. Because Thomas Jefferson said that it's the nature of man to suffer while things are sufferable. But it's reaching the point where it's not sufferable anymore. And Q and the president are setting it up to where we'll have a window of time. That window of time is going to be from now until the next election or until something else happens. And so, if nothing else, we need to be working towards that end goal. And the more learning that you've done, the more you understand the Constitution, the more you understand where all of this came from, the better off you're going to be SHTF. So, please, do be talking. Establish a contact with your neighbor. Know that you care about them. Let him know you care about him or her. That you know the neighbors, because that's who's going to be around. Those are the people that are going to get in your way, or they're not going to get in your way. But you can't take one step without going by them. You can't get to where you're going until you go by them. So I hope you take that into account. Does anybody else want to say anything? Any comments? Go ahead now.
Hello?
Yes, sir, Mr. Fred.
Oh, I was thinking about our friend in Missouri there. It seems to me that he could be part of the militia. Militia reserve, where you write a letter to your Secretary of State in your state, and you, like Brent Winters was saying, you petition to be on the registered militia or the unregistered reserve militia, and you set your house up as a rally point with your other neighbors, and you get them to all sign petitions to be part of your reserve militia, and you call it your home defense militia group. And whatever comes down, you guys rally. You have a bell. You chime that bell. People come together. And then you can also join the sheriff's posse as reserve sheriffs. And that way you can carry guns. Anyway, I yield.
Any more comments?
Yeah, I was wanting to say one more thing. We have a what we do in Missouri is we have a Hold on. You guys there?
Yep.
Yeah, in Missouri we have a kind of a three-man militia per area. Like, you know, not in like certain parts of the county will have three guys, and then on the four corners of the county or whatever, and that way there's able to communicate with many, many others that are ready, just waiting. So that's kind of what we set up here. Now some places have more, than three, but in my area we have three. And there's, like I said, many, many more. As far as the posse goes with the sheriff here is utterly ridiculous. He's not constitutional at all. So he doesn't even, I don't know what his posse consists of. I think it's just deputies maybe and some of their friends or brothers or something like that. But it's kind of a boss hog scene here, so. You know, it's old. He's been in for like 12 years, and nobody will run against him. And it seems like when people do, they end up in jail or something. So he's a dirty guy. You know, so that's what we got to deal with here. And like you guys know, at the local level, that's where it's all going to happen when it has to go down. And we got to be there to do it. Because nobody else is going to step up and do it, but we do have to have our backs and our friends with us when we do it to make sure that everything goes smoothly, especially in a citizen's arrest situation. You know, you want three or four guys and then, like I said, a militia back, and then that way everybody knows that this is legitimate. Citizen's arrest are just as legitimate as any other arrest made by any law enforcement officers in any part of the country. So that's our meal ticket, fellas. And we gotta educate ourselves moving forward and get our people get their heads out of the clouds. They've got to come down out of the clouds. They can't ignore it because we need them too. We need our families and our friends to help during this, you know, like he's saying, to be prepared. We got to get prepared now.
Tanya, do you want to say something?
I have another thought. Since there are only three of you guys running around like that, you know, a courier has the ability to carry a gun 24/7, even on airplanes and everywhere. You might want to look into courier and your, along with that, your committees of correspondence to keep in touch with your militia groups. It's just a suggestion.
Take it under advisement, thanks. Yeah, all ideas are good at this point. We've got to explore our options.
Anybody else? Tanya, now it's time to talk. You want to talk? Please go ahead. Okay. Hearing nothing, I'm going to close the call. This has been the discussion group. We use the NLA room. We appreciate everyone's participation tonight. And all of the views expressed were the views of the participants, not the views of the NLA. Not necessarily the views of the NLA. So the NLA agrees with some things. But I want to invite you to come back tomorrow, not tomorrow, next week, Thursday, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll have this call again. Thank everyone for being here, and we'll now close it. We'll see you guys later.